You are looking at a traveler who just bought a ticket for a very special kind of a trip. The cost? A few dollars. And his mind.
Do you like music?
It's rich. It's alive. It's vivid. Stereophonic sound.
Are you fed up with constantly searching for the records you want?
Fame. Fortune. Platinum records. It's every boy's dream.
Every one of my records means something. The label, the producer, the year it was made.
I'm teaching you about rock music.
Seriously, you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars.
Okay, let's spin a disc.
Hey, gang. Welcome back. This is Cut by Cut. We're looking at episode 51 of Paul's Critique. This is Car Thief. That's not going to be the official title. That's our placeholder title. But that's the song we're discussing today. We are on the side two of the classic Paul's Boutique. And with me here today, coming hot off the new year and festive war on Christmas.
What is up?
How are you, Chris?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Back in the saddle.
What does that mean?
Well,
had you fallen out of the saddle?
People don't necessarily know when we record the episodes as opposed to when we release them.
That's for sure.
But we recorded a bunch.
Yep.
Had kind of a backlog, if you will.
Yeah.
And then we refused to talk to each other for like 6 weeks.
We had to let it all, we had to let our hot takes cool off a little bit.
It wasn't quite that.
We shut down camp for the holidays.
Yeah, sure.
And called it a siesta, if you will, so that we could rejuvenate our spirit and soul.
Yeah.
And then I had broken some ribs.
Still broken, right?
They're healing. I mean, I guess I'm not going to stay broken, right? They're always in a process of healing. But yeah, somebody had been throwing away some really strange stuff in my garbage, like dolls with the faces ripped off.
Should we investigate?
I did some light investigation and found out that it was a mix of my neighbor and my cousin. My cousin had come and cleaned out her car here.
Oh.
And then my neighbor had tossed some stuff. So I reached into the garbage can and in doing so placed my ribs over the lip of the can. It's one of those really tall town cans, you know?
Yeah, sure.
And couldn't get to the bottom, so decided to, instead of
push
doing
push harder?
Yeah, exactly. To do anything intelligent, I went the other way into idiocy and felt them snap.
Get these damn ribs out of the way and anything's possible.
Yeah, right? Suddenly I'm totally malleable. Wow, I wish I had jelly bones all the time. I could slide under doors and I could be a secret agent of sorts. That would be amazing. Secret agent jelly bones.
We have to watch how much you make me laugh. I only so I don't break out coughing all over.
Well, welcome
the
back.
Podcast.
Yeah, and then both of us are now fighting colds.
Yeah, so this is the recovery podcast.
I feel like we've been sick for most of Paul's Boutique.
So why not take out our anger and angst on would-be car thieves?
Exactly. Or biters.
Biters, as they
are. Yeah, or pose yours.
Gankin' Styles.
Gangnam Style?
No, don't they use that word in one of the songs? Gank, coming up, maybe?
They do, yeah.
Yeah, all right, there you go.
Do you remember that big hit from Korea, Gangnam Style?
Oh, yeah.
So I had gone the whole year purposely not listening to that song, like avoiding it, leaving the room, turning off the radio, doing everything I could to avoid Gangnam Style, right? And I went to a person's house for New Year's, and just a few minutes before the ball dropped, they were like, hey.
That's what they played.
We should tune into like NBC or whatever it was. And they were like, you know, we're right here, Carson Daly at the ball drop. Here's Gangnam Style. And I was so furious that I had made it within like 5 minutes of the new year.
Nice.
Yeah, I have a weird reaction to like over-sensationalized pop songs.
Sure.
You know, like I will refuse. Like I didn't realize, because I don't listen to the radio, I didn't know that Pharrell's Happy was a thing for a long time.
Oh.
And then once I was aware that it was a thing, I was like, okay, I'm going to do everything I can now.
Not to listen to
it. To avoid this song. And I don't know what it is about me. I think it's that sort of musical elitism.
Yeah.
Musical snobbery.
Yeah, sure.
And I just...
You weren't there first, so you don't want to listen to it.
It's not that I wasn't even there first. It was like I arrived and this is what everyone was listening to.
Sure.
You know, you go to a party and it's kind of lame. You stop going to parties.
Oh, it's usually the opposite. I get invited and don't go, and I stop getting invited.
Well, that's not a bad – I like that concept too. Just did you say yes and then stop going?
You never – you know, you'd be like non-committal about it.
You'd be like, hey, yeah, Chris, you want to come to a party?
Maybe.
Friday's a day of the week that something's happened. Well, I'm glad then that I know that about you. I feel pretty solid. So did you do anything for the New Year's or for the Christmas, and then we'll move on to Car Thief?
Typical, you know, visited family. That's about it. Nothing too exciting. We had a good time.
Yeah.
Kids are great. Kids spoiled the shit out of the kids. And
good.
Now I have to explain to them why they've got it so good for... Now I have ammo to explain to them why they've got it so good for another year.
And why they can't get anything for the next 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's diabolical. So we're embedded now inside two. We're in the final sort of moments of the album, right? We've only got like 4 or 5 tracks left.
Yeah, and some of them, if you can even call them that.
Yeah, it's like an end credit scene, B-Boys Bouliers, which is like an end credit scene to a movie. You know, like when they're like, here are some funny things that happened while we were filming. I feel like that's the sort of...
Yeah, outtakes, but not like funny. You just...
Yeah.
Just the leftovers.
Yeah, and we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah.
There's the oddly bookendish Ask for Janice.
Yep.
Right, which rounds out the album, and I imagine, well, we'll talk to that when we get to that. But right now, we're at Car Thief.
Yeah.
So
here we are.
Should I pull the pin and toss it off to you? Sort of hot potato hand grenade?
Sure.
All right. Hot potato hand grenade. Here you go. Ting.
That was the sound of me running out of the room.
That's not catching the hot potato hand grenade.
Hand grenades ain't nothing to mess with, man.
No. So we'll start with some static.
Did I call it a hand grenade? Hand grenade.
A Hank grenade. I'm hankering for Hank a grenade, grenade of... Yeah, let's start with some static.
Shh. Sorry. We did the Misfits two seasons ago.
The static, this video age starts in the pool hall.
Okay, get serious. Let's get serious. Yeah, I thought it'd be worth starting out with what... I thought it would be better.
Yeah.
Worth not... Starting out what this song could have been. This was one of the first songs they had kind of queued up.
Oh, really?
It was not the first, but one of.
Okay.
And it was a lot more vulgar originally.
Really?
Before they toned it down. Yeah, I won't say violent, but more vulgar.
Because the 10th line of this song is motherfucker.
Well, I guess that's the type of vulgarity that I... Welcome. As opposed to one of the lines getting cut. If you've got kids in the room, maybe let's...
Now's a good time to tell them to leave.
Wait till late. Put a pin in this episode and come back later. I'll give you a few seconds.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we are.
You could have just paused it too. We didn't have to actually give them seconds.
I didn't actually pause.
Put you on a timer.
One of the original references was Ad-Rock's claim, I be jerking off with my head in a noose. So like way more offensive, I guess, than...
A little autoerotic asphyxiation.
Yeah, well, nothing like going out Carradine style, right?
Or Michael Hutchins style.
Oh.
This could be a people who have died from autoerotic asphyxiation podcast, but I feel like that would be too much of a digression.
Yeah. So that was the best evidence of how this song could have been a little more vulgar, but got toned down as it wasn't even...
Do you think they're editing their own stuff, or do you think someone came up and said, hey, look, this may be a little too extreme?
So it says the track was more... So some of this is out of Dan Leroy's Paul's Boutique 33 and a third issue. And it says the track was more deliberately offensive than anything on the band's debut. So he did this on purpose.
Yep.
And they handed it to Capitol.
Oh, okay.
And it says if this was, in this speculation here, if this was indeed the version shopped to the executives at Capitol and MCA, it must have seemed the Beasties were out to top the excesses. Like they were trying to like just one up their last album in more ways than one. The track ended up going in a different direction in its final form. So that's
well,
that's
yeah. I would imagine. I would imagine the execs that coming across the desk and somebody saying, "This is not a thing that we can have on the album." Your target audience was like freshmen in college bros. I doubt many of them have gone the autoerotic asphyxiation route. And well, it takes away from the fun of, I think, the playful violence. Like, that's a little too visceral for me.
So, let's get to that now, because it's a good segue.
Yeah.
He in the second line of the song, talks about smashing a guy in a pool hall's face with a cue ball.
Right. That, to me, is very sort of Bruce Willis.
okay.
You know, that's...
utilitarian. You like that he's using what's in the room.
Well, did you see? Yeah, very
improvised.
Very Jackie
say.
Chan.
Yeah, improvised.
yeah, it's kind of one of those moments that's a lot like, what was the film about the guy? He's a bodyguard, but he works in a he's a bouncer, right? It's played by Patrick Swayze.
Oh, Roadhouse.
It's a very Roadhouse. I mean, you watch Roadhouse.
Astute listeners will maybe keep that film in mind for future episodes.
Roadhouse is a really brutal film.
Yeah.
And this is that kind of late 80s, PG-13, excessive violence.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't believe that there are ever any reports of the Beastie Boys actually getting into fights.
Yeah, right. So that was one of the things. Like, some of the stuff has... a lot of the stuff in their songs, they're alluding to silly things or kind of crazy circumstances they created themselves.
Yeah.
And then this one, you're like, are they starting bar fights now? Is this a thing? Or,
yeah. And so,
but not just the bar fight, like smash. Like, so this is where they go right out the gate. They're like, we're not even going to have a bar fight. I'm just going to brain a guy.
Well, it does start with kind of a,
it stuff does, broke out.
A Donnybrook does occur, right?
Like they're setting the scene.
Right.
We were there. Shit got wild.
Right.
I don't think you like Will Ferrell movies there.
But, I like some of them. I'm not anyway, opposed.
It's the Steve Carell moment. I stabbed a guy with a trident, you know?
Yeah, yeah. What's that, Anchorman?
Yeah, Anchorman.
Well, this opening reminds me of this author by the name of Gwyneth Brooks, and she wrote a poem, very famous poem called We Real Cool.
Okay.
And it's a villanelle, which doesn't really matter much. Oh, it's a ballad, rather. I'm sorry, not a villanelle. It's the poetry teacher in me. But it's the pool players, seven at the golden shovel. And the poem goes, we real cool, we left school. We lurk late, we strike straight. We sing sin, we thin gin. We jazz June, we die soon. To me... this is that moment after this poem, right? So the poem itself was meant to be this, I mean, it's what, eight lines of this really rhythmic beat,
yeah.
This internal rhyme, which the Beastie Boys are king at.
Yeah.
But it's seven kids at the Golden Shovel who are high school dropouts. It's you know, the author and the author's posse just waiting for the end to come.
Huh.
And so I've always kind of in my mind every
time.
It's a
badass poem, by the way.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is that we've got nothing left, so let's just punch somebody in the face with a pool cue. Right?
Yeah.
And then I met this girl. She tried to gank me. So I smacked her in the booty with a plank, B.
They love
booty smacking.
It's booty smacking, I got to say. There's an. A large amount of booty smacking going on. I feel like it's every other song just about.
I really feel like there should be more songs called Booty Smackin'. I feel like I would buy most of them.
You would?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
The saying booty smacking, you at home, just say the words booty smacking.
Or what song was it? I hit the cutie in the booty with the snooty and...
right, right. We're all dressed up on Zoo. Or
all hopped up on Zooty. That's what I was...
But then it becomes this really strange diatribe about plagiarism.
Yeah, or... yeah, stealing rhymes, biting.
Yeah, exactly. Which leads us, you would propose, to a really, really solid question that gets, I think, to the core of this entire song and the validity of this whole song, which was...
We were trying to figure out, Eric and I, in the green room, per se, neither of us could come off with the top of our heads, come up with, you know, Beastie's clone... you know, a band that came up that had their style or tried to do something similar to them. It's kind of...
if anything, the Beasties are sort of a clone of the early 80s hip hop.
I guess,
with
yeah.
the sort of popcorn lyrics, the, you know, the Fury.
Yeah, so then, is it one of the, I'm going to mess up the Shakespeare line, but is it, is this a bit of protesting too much, perhaps? I also thought the irony was that here you are where most of your, I mean, Dust Brothers did some amazing stuff with these sounds in this album, right?
Yeah.
The Slash Beasties, I don't know the collaboration there entirely, but I mean, the way they sampled and the way they make all these beats and blend everything together to make these tracks, there's some pretty neat stuff going on. But how I tried to take a point up to, I tried to make points up to now to point out when it was actually a piece of music crafted by one of the Beasties. And it's only been like two or three bass lines, maybe two, leading up to this point. So
okay.
I find it ironic that they're talking about biting from a hip hop standpoint, but meanwhile, the musical aspects of what they're doing is totally built off of, not even inspired by, it's literally pieced together of samples of other people's stuff.
Which I would counter, they have paid for.
I agree completely.
So it's not plagiarism, it's only plagiarism if you
don't give proper credit.
If you don't give credit, right?
Okay.
So when you write a research paper or you do any kind of research, you give as much credit as you can. There's a wonderful quote, I forget who it's from, who talks about how basically the job of the college professor is to reduce a book to note cards.
Sure.
And then to take those cards, turn those into a book that some other professor will then turn into note cards
yeah.
to place and make their book from.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so all of sort of collected literature and collective literary criticism is just reorganizing note cards.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I like, going back to Shakespeare real quick, Shakespeare writes in Richard III, if you must write prose or poems, the words you use should be your own, which of course, my man Morrissey from the Smiths bites in a song called Cemetery Gates,
okay,
where he then purposely plagiarizes it, calls himself out for plagiarism, and purposely then mispronounces plagiarize as plagiarize.
Yeah, sure.
You know, sort of that knowing, and I think that's what the Beasties are doing here in a way, is that knowing, look, we're doing it differently, so it's okay for us.
Sure, sure, sure.
Which I boils down to a lot of fun. But, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law.
Yes.
Which we get then. And I had my routines before you all.
Yep.
How do we know?
Right. You can only tell me that, and I have to believe you. I've got to take it at face value.
Were these your routines when you were in a hardcore band? Right? Is it the popcorn lyrics? Where are we at with this?
I guess that's where I want to go with that. Like, I know they know full well their history.
Right.
And it's, I know, you know, they kind of came out, I'm stuttering here, but I don't feel like they've been around that long.
Well, at least not at this
point.
Students
this
is only their second album.
They're clearly good. They're students of the game, if you will. I mean, their whole style is to pay homage to everything that they enjoy,
right?
Like, they're constantly, and that's why I do believe everything they do is credit to the people before them, right? They're calling out all the references. You're talking from TV shows to food they eat to music they listen to, and so there's credit there. But they're still new to this. They're still young punk kids. It's their second album.
Yep.
Right. So, you know what? You people can't see my body language. I'm kind of like, well, how can you be out here saying you have your routines when?
Yeah, you're kind of doing this Lady Liberty or Lady Justice balancing the.
Well, you hear about there's plenty of from hardcore bands to hip hop artists. You hear about how they, or you know, hell, if you've watched 8 Mile, you got things like that where you got people standing on street corners rapping, right? And this is what people are doing, right?
Even grannies in Pepsi ads are rapping,
right?
Everybody's rapping.
So you know what I mean, though. So like, I don't know if. You don't get a sense of them doing that. They kind of like had lightning in the bottle with Def Jam there and then had this album and flash, I don't want to say flash in the pan, but kind of rocketed off on this trajectory.
Okay.
When it, I don't know how much of this, again,
well, I feel I, like
there isn't a good sense. I don't have, I'm saying what I'm partially saying is I don't have a good sense of their, how long they've been at it, how, making a point of.
Well, long enough, apparently, that they feel like people are
biting
them or biting routines that they've had for ages.
Yeah.
What I, you know, I wanted to talk about it with, you know, a little later in one of the episodes, but I feel like much of the bevy of references from this album are in jokes for the recording.
Sure, yeah.
And if you're not with them, if you're not part of them, if you're not willing to at least either ignore them, which I did a lot of the early recordings, I some of this stuff like, or Mookie's gonna kick your mother fucking ass.
Yep.
I was like, oh, I don't know what this means, so I'll just ignore it, which is partially why I never really connected to Car Thief.
Yeah, well, and you know, and in some sense, you don't have to. Like, so Mookie's the guy, he's a tough guy, he's gonna kick my ass. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't mess with Mookie.
Or like or, like Ricky always says, you got a token pass. Yeah, I assumed that was a Rick Rubin thing because he's got this kind of, well, he didn't then, but nowadays he has this kind of like Zen Buddhist meditation jive going okay. on when he does his things. And so for me, many of these references were things that I willingly let go over my head.
Sure.
But people in the Beasties camp were probably all high-fiving themselves.
Yeah, in the back are going, like, oh, snap. You know, especially yeah. at the that moment of like when they're figuring it out, you know. They actually, there's a good, there was a video clip I was watching of them, the Beasties, talking about kind of the inception of doing an album like this, like how they do it. And the second album in particular, a lot of this was them just trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, so of course they're
mocking
much,
themselves. Yeah. They're friends. They're
just like, well, what if I do this and rhyme this with it? Because we talked earlier, maybe probably the first episode, where they had a list, like a notebook of words they just, like challenges to each other to use in a song, right? So
which word in this song do you think was the biggest challenge to squeeze in?
Oh, let's see here. That's a good question.
Because I want to quickly,
let's come back. Let's come
while
back
you're looking
to that.
At that,
yeah, yeah.
What I want to look for is, I want to jump down to, because I had a deal with a money hungry miser, ba-dum boom, right? We just talked about that with
yep,
Def Jam stuff.
Yep.
Had a cane filled cool with my man Rush. Saw my teeth fall in the sink when I started to brush. And do you know what a cane filled cool is?
Well, through the magic of the internet, yeah, I learned that people.
Oh, you don't know it from your young years.
No,
as
I've
a
never,
teenager.
Never, I never got to this level of, you know, I never got past straight edge. Really,
yeah. Yeah.
I have a cider from
I
time
think
to time.
This is one of the reasons why people don't go past straight edge.
So at the trajectory I'm on, I might be smoking cocaine filled cool cigarettes by the age of 187.
I think if you make it to 101, you should definitely
just
light
do
up.
It.
Yeah, what a way to go out.
At the age
how'd your
of
dad go out? Massive OD. He smoked an entire cigarette full
never
of cocaine.
Never done a drug in his life and just went straight to PCP.
Oh, hell yeah. That's actually my plan. Do you know that? I have a 30-year plan for my demise. I'm going out.
This is a little too Hunter S. Thompson.
I'm going out at 80. That's like the parachute cord is being
sure,
pulled.
Okay.
That's a promise to myself. But up until that point, so at 50,
there's a progression.
Yeah,
to
there
your...
is. At 50, I'm gonna stop caring about fast food. And I'm going to start eating fast food.
Oh.
At 60, I'm going to start smoking cigarettes again.
Okay.
At 70, I'm going to try hallucinogenics.
Okay.
And at 80, I'm going to take a ton of painkillers, give myself lots of little cuts, and then go out for a swim in the ocean.
Oh,
and get
Jesus
eaten by
Christ.
A shark. Now, my concern is I don't want to poison the shark, so I don't know how many painkillers I have to take so that I don't feel pain,
excuse
but I don't
me.
Hurt the shark.
Oh, God.
So when I hear about people, you know, like overfishing for sharks,
oh my God,
and all this stuff, it's really not for the sharks' care that I'm worried.
So,
it's like,
so then I have to become the shark fisherman by that age.
So you
That's
can
my,
like,
I
cut
can
me out of
you.
The shark, pull me out Jaws style, and give me some kind of funeral or whatever's left of me.
I've got to find my buddy's remains.
Exactly. I'm digging. But so what I loved is I came across this thing when I was looking up cane-filled Cool. And it was like, prolonged use can lead to damage to tooth enamel, that bone, too. And nerve endings. And I was like, oh, yeah, plus, you know, smoking a cigarette full of cocaine probably has its own problems as well. Like,
well, that's so what...
If you do it too much, your teeth might get a little yellow.
Well, I wanted... So in 1989 or 88, when they're doing this...
Yeah.
They knew the effects then enough to sing about them.
Right.
So this was happening enough that the idea of prolonged
use
practice of this...
So people had been doing it probably... For a lot longer. I know
cocaine's not a new thing, but in 89, but I'm just, it's...
No, I feel like in 89, cocaine was the thing.
Well, yeah.
Because you watch all those movies. It's one of the things I hate about movies that take place in like 79 to 80, like Boogie Nights.
Yeah.
Like 1979, New Year's, somebody goes, hey, we should try cocaine.
Oh, and then bam, it's like
and a then thing. Suddenly, yeah, thing. Suddenly the guy's standing there in his underwear. He's got a beer gut, like barbecue sauce dripping down his chest, because that's what happens with cocaine, apparently.
Well, I think to the, I mean, yes, in a movie, that's movie logic, right?
Yeah.
But I think in terms of how, like, the turning point of something becoming ubiquitous, because it really is, you la-di-da-di-da, I'm going, let's maybe get off the drugs and go to like a cell phone or something, right? You're not really paying attention. More and more people have them. And then you turn around and it's like, holy fuck. Like, this happened to me. Everyone's got one of these things and I don't. And
oh, yeah, totally.
So
I just watched with my friend Alicia, I just rewatched Shaun of the Dead last night.
Yeah, yeah.
And it struck me that Ed on his phone all the time is where we all are now.
Sure.
So we're all laughing at Nick Frost's Ed.
Yeah.
Like, what a loser. And most of us can't go a whole pee without like being on our phones. But anyway, I love that line, but I love a good Bowie reference too.
Sure. And
so if I can work in Morrissey, I'm pretty happy to be mixing in Bowie as well. You'd be doing Nose Candy on the Bowie Coke mirror.
So is that, did he have his own?
Bowie was a huge cokehead during the German years.
So yeah, did they invent the idea of the Bowie Coke mirror as a quote unquote, those three words together? Or
was a Bowie Coke mirror something you could yeah, run could to
I
Walgreens go,
could I run
and
out to Walgreens
up?
And buy my compact, my Bowie?
This is a shower mirror. This is a personal compact. I'm looking for something more of a Bowie Coke mirror.
Yeah, looking
mirror.
For the Bowie. You got a Bowie?
Yeah. I always felt like, did you ever go to those fairs when you were a kid? And, you know, those things that like roll into town and you can win
yeah.
prizes?
Yeah, Washington County Fair. The pride of South County or Carolina, Rhode Island.
I think that those early mirrors were used as Coke mirrors. You know, you'd win the mirror with the Def Leppard written across it.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, so little kids win them and they're like, what the hell do I do with this? There's no even backing to put it on a wall. I think they were specifically sold as Coke mirrors. So okay. In my mind, this is a Washington County Fair.
They've got like a Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you've ring around a mirror.
You've managed to hit a broken BB gun. You've managed to use a broken BB gun to hit five of the seven things hanging. So yeah. You win the Coke mirror. Congratulations.
And what is this for? You'll find out, kid.
Yeah, I went to the Brooklyn Museum.
Give it to your dad. He knows.
The Brooklyn Museum had a Bowie retrospective. It was like this traveling show of all Bowie stuff.
Okay.
And the only reference to drugs in the entire thing was a tiny spoon. It was like, this spoon may have been used by Bowie during his cocaine phase. And I was like, yeah, you need a bigger spoon than that.
Need a bigger spoon.
Precisely. Ricky Powell pops up again.
Yeah, so that's why the Ricky reference before got confusing, because I would side with you on the first Ricky reference to be Ruben.
Yep.
And then the second one here is the photography that gets the credit for a lot of the band photos of the time.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes photos and all that.
I guess everybody looks up to somebody, and he seems to be who they were looking up to for class and style.
Yeah, it's like he's got a style, but he's also at the same time seems to be running as largely as a part of their entourage, you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of like give and take there.
Give and take, tit for tat.
Yeah, he gives I mean, these guys running around in track suits and pimp gear and and him being maybe a little more
well, I was also
cultured but also into the lifestyle, right?
I was kind of shocked, well, not shocked, I guess, but kind of interested in the concept of the Godfather of Soul in the belly of the beast. So first of all, we get a biblical reference, but more importantly, with the Godfather of Soul, in early hip hop, James Brown was sampled from almost exclusively.
Right.
He had so much stuff and so many amazing beats. Funky Drummer appears. Without Funky Drummer, I'm convinced you wouldn't have Public Enemy, even.
Sure.
Who sample it religiously, Terminator X's all the time, who are also a fellow Def Jam label, yep. and who we know were listening to early Beastie Boys demos in the car. They would drive around and listen to it and critique each other and stuff like that.
Sure.
And so I wonder if the Godfather of Soul bit here is about people biting James Brown as much as they are, stealing his stuff.
He was also in jail at the time for having,
for cocaine, for drugs.
Yeah. Well, he got in a car chase. That's what it was.
Yeah.
He did something, decided not to pull over, because they probably would have let him go. It's James Brown.
Right.
Decided to make a car chase out of it, in which they found him full of drugs.
They found him full of drugs.
I think him and his car.
They just unzipped him and all these. It wasn't actually James Brown. It was four bags of cocaine stacked on top of each other in a coat. It was like a Scooby-Doo episode.
I'd like to blame a lot of things for that, but
I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you pesky traffic signs.
I left a couple words out of the sentence as well. His car.
Yes. Okay. And they continue, obviously, hitting with the drug stuff. But again, we get to I'm a Dusted Old Bummy Hurdy-Gurdy Man, which Donovan's Hurdy-Gurdy Man, I love this reference because that song is amazing. I don't like much of Donovan.
It's sampled in this track, right?
Yeah,
they tie it right in.
Is from that. But also, someone was dating, Ad Rock was dating Ione Sky.
Oh, yeah.
Who is the daughter of Donovan.
Right.
So that's even a diss on her dad in a way, right? I'm a dusted old bummy hurdy-gurdy man. Yeah, they're referencing the song, but
like, well, I was looking at it as more of a well, the whole thing's a diss, right? The whole point of the song is a diss.
Yeah.
So they're throwing it out as a diss. Yeah. Okay.
I love, and then finally, I guess the last thing I want to say is we were talking about our favorite sort of, what's our favorite line or our favorite rhyme?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I love, say goodbye to my girl, my lawyer, and accountants. To me, those are three people who I don't know if I would say goodbye to when I went to prison. Certainly my girl, right, obviously.
Yep.
But my lawyer and my accountants is hilarious. And I love that accountants get top billing in this triumvirate, right?
I liked the line. I guess I liked the. I don't mean to jump on your thing, but boing. I liked the couplet of the line before that with it, and that he's 5-0 caught me and now I'm in the mountains.
Yeah.
So that's the line that leads into the one you liked. So,
which reminds me of, you know, you were talking about Hunter S. Thompson earlier, right? Going to live in Colorado, living up there in the mountains. There were a lot of people during the late beat stages, right, or pre-hippie days, who had just dropped out of California and moved to the mountains so they could kind of do their own thing.
Now known as Portland, Oregon.
I'm just kidding. All our friend in Portland, chime in. Let us know what you think. And that's pretty much all I've got for Car Thief. I don't really have much else.
I think we hit it all. Oh, there's the line. Spit it out, Chris. Da da da. You ain't a pimp. Wait, that's the line from the movie. With regards to, you asked me if I had any more. There's one more thing we didn't talk about. So real briefly, the line in the song about not of whether you're a gosh, Chris, where I just had it and I lost it.
Find it.
Wait. The last line of the song. I got it. With regards to the me having anything left. One more thing. The last line of the song, you ain't nothing but a car thief who must be stopped, is a reference to the film The Mac. Namely, at this point, the only name I recognize was Richard Pryor, but he's not the main character, but he's in it. And the line in the movie is, you ain't a pimp, you're nothing but a car thief. So it's a nice, like, final diss as they're leaving the song.
To all the biters
in the world. To all the biters in the world, yeah.
So, well, that raises a whole question of who's stopping them. And is that the stop? Does that loop us now back? Is this a circular narrative? Does this go back to why he's punched this guy in the pool hall and broken his nose?
Maybe so. I mean, the thing about that movie, The Mac, is it is characteristic. One, I don't even want to call it an anti-hero movie. Like, you watch the movie, I guess, from what I read. I did not get a chance to watch it, but there's no one. There's one character in the movie that's redeemable, and it is by no means a main character at all. So the whole movie is a bunch of just degenerates.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because we go back to the Shakespeare bit, right?
Yep.
That line comes from Richard III, which we watch Richard III pull the strings on everybody else.
Yeah.
And there is not one character in all of Richard III, save one, who is in any way, shape, or form redeemable or worthwhile. They're either all murdered or they're all villainous.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of how, I mean, it's a blaxploitation film, but it's, you know, of that era from 1973, but none of them are ever good people. Shaft or like Dolan, but they're lovable in a way. Like
they're anti-heroes.
The Mac is one level deeper than that, where like you probably shouldn't like any of these people. So it's more of a fiasco, not fiasco, but yeah, it just seemed like a horribly depressing movie to watch, and I wanted to watch it before this episode, but I couldn't line it up.
Yeah, no, I hear you on that. I would add that we love sort of these villainous characters, right?
Yeah.
And the Beastie Boys are aware, I believe, more so than... I believe that the Beastie Boys and their audience know that they're just playing, that this is pretend.
Yeah.
And I think that in some forms of hip-hop, that wall isn't as big or as fortified, and that it becomes very blurred between what the singer-songwriters are doing as a character.
Yeah.
Than what they are doing as in reality.
It's the problem with any of the pop culture, really. It's not the people who get it that are the problem. It's the people who don't get it. It's the Marilyn Manson fan who thinks they should actually go and commit mass murder.
Right. Or,
do you know what, yeah. Or, and I'm not, by no means, I don't blame Marilyn Manson. I'm just saying, like, but it's that, the trope is not unique to
or the parents, to hip-hop. Or even more importantly than that, though, the parents and the senators and the
congressmen
who see a kid commit murder say,
quote, there's Marilyn Manson, quote someone else. I don't even mean to drag Marilyn Manson into everything, but.
Right. I mean, we're just arbitrarily choosing a name, but I think that the real danger more so are the people who look into this world.
Yeah.
And put two things together that don't exist.
Causation versus correlation, that kind of thing.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And so it is with that.
That we correlate an ending.
I believe. If you could steal a car, what car would you steal?
Oh, that's a good question.
And if you could bite from any artist, who would you bite from?
I'm going to flip it back around on you and ask you the same question. But car? A good old-fashioned Dodge Charger of the age that they were classic. 60, 68?
Oh, Super I Sport like that. Yeah.
Kind of era?
That's really solid.
Just melt those tires all the way down the road.
Yeah. I would want some mid-80s Chevy Nova.
Okay.
My mom had one, and the thing took off. Like, I think she got rid of it because it was, I don't know, a crappy car. But ultimately, it also cruised, or she just drove it really fast.
Yeah.
So who would you bite?
If I could do it, if I could, well, I tend to like Scottish folk artists.
Okay.
Frightened Rabbit's one of my favorite, Scott Hutchinson died a year or so ago. But the Scottish accent paired with like depressing folk music.
Yeah.
If I could steal that, I'd ride it all the way.
All right.
As far as I could.
I like that. I'm going to be equally as sort of non-hot take or non-like cutting. And I'm going to say I think Tullycraft is always one of those bands that I've always wanted to be in. Like, I wish I was clever enough to write those lyrics.
Yeah, sure.
So flat out stealing them and being like, yeah, I did this. Or just looking at theirs and like, you know, like when you're a kid and you're learning how to draw and you use tracing paper over somebody else's piece and you're like, yeah,
I drew this.
I did that. I totally figured out how to do
this. Weird that it was the same exact size as the comic book. Wow, I wanted to do it in scale, see? So I would totally do that.
If you don't mind, let me give a B to that. A choice B.
All right.
Firehouse. 80s or early 90s. End of the era, kind of like, for lack of a better term, sorry everybody, cock rockers. You know, right. Just long, almost jerry curled hair, shirt buttoned wide open, and the voice of an angel.
All right, I can see. I think that'd be a good look for you, and I want to see more of that in 2019. Well, if you are looking for us, you will find us at Cut X Cut Podcast. You will find us at Cut X Cut, all one word crammed together, because I have poor planning skills. And that would be on iTunes. You'll find us at Radio Mutation. And you can communicate with us at Cut X Cut Podcast, all one word squished, at gmail.com.
Or check out our backlog of our complete episode.
Yeah, we don't do a paywall. You can find everything.
CutXCut.com.
And that's how the cookie pool halls. What the hell am I talking about?
I'm going to smash you in the ribs with a cue ball.
Thrown like a star in my vast sleep, I opened my eyes to take a peek. To find that I was by the sea, gazing with tranquility. Just then, when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love. Then, when the hurdy-gurdy man came singing songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy sang. Hurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy. Histories of ages past, unenlightened shadows cast down through all eternity, the crying of humanity. 'Tis then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing songs of love. Then when the hurdy-gurdy man comes singing songs of love. Hurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy-gurdy sang. Hurdy-gurdy-hurdy-gurdy-hurdy-gurdy-hurdy-gurdy-hurdy-gurdy. Roly-poly man is singing songs of love. Roly-poly man.